Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. Calling it a senseless act of violence, the United States Embassy is condemning a Taliban attack in central Kabul that killed at least 28 people and wounded more than 200. The Taliban launched its so-called spring offensive a week ago, and since then there's been intensified conflicts across Afghanistan. You can read more details on that story at voanews.com. Hundreds of Cairo residents are protesting after an Egyptian police officer shot dead a street vendor and injured another one. It's the latest in a series of incidents that have triggered public outrage over the behavior of the police. A police chief of the New Cairo district said Tuesday that three policemen argued with a street vendor over the price of a cup of tea. Then one of them shot two people in the eastern Cairo suburb. He said the wounded man was taken to a hospital, the policeman was arrested, and referred to prosecutors. In the United States, Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton hope to emerge victorious from Tuesday's primaries in New York. They are contests that offer big delegate hauls and an opportunity from the frontrunners to inch closer to their party's nominations. New York victories for Trump and Clinton would be a big step forward, but the outcome of the Republican primary likely will not be definitive. Terror returns to Jerusalem as the headline of one Israeli newspaper. It comes after a bomb blew up a bus and set up fire to another in southern Jerusalem Monday, wounding 16 people. There was no immediate claim of responsibility from any Palestinian factions, and Israeli officials have declined to assign direct blame. Meanwhile, the Israeli prime minister vowed to settle accounts with whoever executed the attack. VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry pledged Monday to continue working on a two-state solution for Israeli-Palestinian peace during President Barack Obama's final 9 months in office. During a speech to the Israel advocacy group, J Street, Kerry said the two-state path is the only solution that will work. Iran's official IRNA news agency is reporting that the country's parliament has approved a $97 billion budget for the current year. The Tuesday report says the new budget allows the government to set the price of oil at $40 a barrel and to export 2.25 million barrels per day. Iran says it has increased its crude export to 2.1 million barrels per day, almost double the production levels before a nuclear deal with world powers went into effect in January. The deal resulted in the lifting of international sanctions and the resumption of Iranian oil exports. Syrian activists say airstrikes targeting two opposition-held towns in the northwestern part of the country have killed 44 civilians. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says three children were among the dead. The observatory's chief says the strikes are among the deadliest since a ceasefire took effect at the end of February. A reporter for the German public broadcaster SWR was detained Tuesday at an Istanbul airport in what Turkish authorities said was a reaction to an unspecified previous experience. The TV correspondent Volker Schneck was stopped from entering Turkey after arriving from Cairo and held in the deportation room at the Istanbul airport. He hasn't been released and he hasn't been given any reasons yet, according to this spokesman. However, a Turkish official said Schwenk had been banned from entering Turkey due to a previous incident. Security services are pressing charges against a Crimean journalist for allegedly undermining Russia's territorial integrity, which could put him in prison for 5 years, according to prosecutors in Crimea Tuesday. Shortly after Russia annexed Crimea from Ukraine in March 2014, the parliament passed a law making it a criminal offense to question Russia's territorial integrity in case opposing the occupation. Last month marked the hottest March in modern history and the 11th consecutive month in which a monthly global temperature record was broken. Officials at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said Tuesday that the string of record-setting months is the longest in its 137 years of record-keeping. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The UN Refugee Agency reports new fighting and severe food shortages in previously peaceful areas of South Sudan are causing thousands of people to flee into neighboring countries.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva. Details coming up. Also, the government of Burundi says it will consult with the UN Human Rights Office on allegations of torture and ill treatment by the country's security forces. And European defense ministers are meeting in Luxembourg today. They are debating how to support Libya's new UN-backed government of national accord. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the UN Refugee Agency reports new fighting and severe food shortages in previously peaceful areas of South Sudan are causing thousands of people to flee into neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
About 2.3 million people have been forced to flee their homes since civil war broke out in South Sudan in December 2013. More than 670,000 are refugees in neighboring countries. The UN Refugee Agency warns refugee numbers are rising in all of South Sudan's neighbors as fighting spreads to formerly peaceful areas of northern Bahr el Ghazal and Warab states. The agency says the new refugees create a huge burden in the asylum countries. It says the UNHCR and other humanitarian agencies are short of cash, putting life-saving services for the refugees at risk. The UNHCR reports an estimated 52,000 South Sudanese have fled into Sudan since January, exceeding planning projections for this year. Spokeswoman Ariane Rumeri says Uganda, too, has seen a sharp increase in new refugees since January, with as many as 800 people a day arriving.
Altogether, 28,000 South Sudanese have sought refuge in Uganda, and 86% of those are women and children. A particular site where they're being sheltered, the Marj 3 in the northwest of the country, is almost near capacity and basic life-saving services are severely overstretched.
Ethiopia hosts some 285,000 South Sudanese refugees, more than any other country. Rumeri says more South Sudanese have arrived in recent weeks after a long period in which very few cross the border. She tells VOA many of the newcomers are children.
Many of the new arrivals into Ethiopia from South Sudan are in fact unaccompanied and separated children, and they fled intra-ethnic clashes in Pochala in the eastern part of South Sudan, and many of them trekked through jungles for several days before reaching Akugo.
The UNHCR reports a similar spike in South Sudanese refugees in Democratic Republic of Congo, where 12,000 people have arrived in the past few months. Northeastern Kenya and the Central African Republic are also recording new arrivals from South Sudan. The UNHCR says the number in Kenya has risen from an average of 100 people a month early this year to 350 people a week during the past 2 months. The refugees say they are fleeing insecurity, intense drought, and the high cost of living. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raad Al Hussein, warned yesterday of a sharp increase in the use of torture and ill treatment in Burundi by the security forces. The Burundi government says it will consult with the UN Human Rights Office on the allegations. Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raad Al Hussein, warned on sharp increase in the use of torture and ill treatment in Burundi by the security forces. The rights office recorded 595 people who had been ill-treated or tortured since April 2015. That's when protests erupted against incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza when he announced he would seek for a third term. Sylvester Nyanwi is the permanent secretary in the Burundi Ministry of Justice.
When we heard about the allegations from the UN Human Rights Commission, we said that we have first to discuss with the representative of the UN High Commission for Human Rights. Then we will have to make a reaction about those allegations. So we cannot say these allegations are true or false, so we have first to consider the report and to verify the allegations, and then after to make a reaction. Yes, some investigations have been made, but sometimes there are some allegations which are not true after verification.
It's not the first time that the UN Human Rights Office made such allegations. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights also voiced concerns about reports of the existence of illegal detention facilities, both in Bujumbura and in the countryside. Nyandri responded to the charge.
So we know that in Burundi we have many challenges about prisons, but we cannot say that there are a generalization of illegal detention. We have some problem to deal with some cases because nowadays the violence has increased, and so we have many cases to deal with.
The United Nations Human Rights Commissioner said that many irregularities were identified in the country's intelligence service facilities, including the fact that 25 of the detainees had been kept in custody beyond the prescribed maximum time limit. Nyandri said that his government will bring any perpetrator to justice for any crime committed.
I know that the office of the prosecutor, there are some security forces who have been brought to justice. After having considered the report, so we're discuss with them about these allegations, and probably to see if these allegations are true or false. We always discuss with the Office of the Human Rights here in Burundi. We always discuss with them about some human rights cases.
With the violence in Burundi a year old now, grenade explosions continue in the Bujumbura neighborhoods. Last night's explosions killed two people and wounded several others. The Burundi government has accused some opposition of being behind the grenade attacks and targeted assassinations. However, the opposition had repeatedly denied the allegations, placing the blame to the government. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
European defense ministers are meeting in Luxembourg today. They're debating how to support Libya's new UN-backed government of national accord. European leaders say restoring peace and order to Libya could help ease the flow of migrants and refugees to Europe. The number of those crossing the Mediterranean to Italy more than doubled last month. AP reports NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg also attended the talks. He says NATO will work with the European Union in supporting the unity government. You were listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Fourteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The UN Refugee Agency reports new fighting and severe food shortages in previously peaceful areas of South Sudan. The Burundi government says it will consult with the UN Human Rights Office on allegations of torture by the country's security forces. And European defense ministers are meeting in Luxembourg today. They are debating how to support Libya's new UN-backed government of national accord. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The International Organization for Migration says nearly 179,000 migrants and refugees have entered Europe so far this year. Most have arrived in Italy, Greece, Cyprus, and Spain. The IOM says at least 737 people have died making the journey. Also, there's updated information on yesterday's story of migrant boats capsizing off the Egyptian coast. The Somali government says a single boat sank, killing about 200 Somalis. Not 400, as originally reported by Italian authorities and others. On a more positive note, more than 200 migrants were rescued last night on the Mediterranean and brought to the Sicilian port of Pozzallo. The migrants were from Ethiopia, Sudan, Somalia, Cameroon, Egypt, Yemen, and Eritrea. Many of those coming to Europe are young people traveling alone or who've been separated from their parents. Reporter Antonella Seferaza has looked into the situation regarding unaccompanied minors. From Palermo, Sicily, she spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
This year, 4,000 minors have arrived in Italy so far. 3,500 of them are unaccompanied minors. According to Save the Children, the organization that promotes the children's rights, the number of unaccompanied children has quadrupled this year. Many of them are teenagers, though there are also 8 or 9 or 10 years old kids. The majority of those arriving in Italy are from Gambia, Somalia, Guinea, and other sub-Saharan countries. Among the statistics, one figure is of a particular concern. Many of these minors, once in Italy, disappear. In 2015, 11,000 minors arrived in Italy, and 6,000 of them just vanished. They disappeared without a trace. This number includes minors arrived in previous years, but it is anyway shocking figures. What happened to them? Giovanna Di Benedetto, a Save the Children spokeswoman, explains that many of them try to reach their families in Northern Europe countries. Obviously, they face a risky trip as they are vulnerable with very little money. They don't speak Italian and risk also to be rejected. As in Italy, minors cannot be sent back in their origin countries, but it's not the same in other European countries. Other minors, especially the younger, escaping from the reception centers, face even worse risks. In fact, there have been cases of sexual exploitation or illegal work exploitation. Humanitarian organizations, Save the Children, are appealing to the government to dedicate more attention to the problem because there is not a standardized procedures.
Tell me how the unaccompanied minors are cared for in Italy.
In Italy, we have 60 specialized structure. They are reception center for children, for minors. They go there when they arrive, and then the humanitarian organization take care of them. Many of them, for example, go to live with Italian family, although the system is not very well organized. But for sure, Italy does not send back the minors in their country of the origin, as many other European countries do. 60 structure, obviously, is not enough, because they can only take 650 minors. And if you consider that we are in April and 4,000 minors have arrived so far, you can understand that this is not enough. Save the Children is asking to introduce a standardized procedure, also a procedure to determine their age, as many minors lie when they ask about their age. They say they are minors because they want to be part of the minor protection system, or they say they are older because they want to be free to go wherever they want. So it's still a confusing procedure, but it cannot be only an Italian problem.
That was reporter Antonella Sferraza from Palermo, Sicily. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. In related news, the European Commission says it will provide nearly $800 million to Greece through 2018 to deal with the migrant and refugee crisis. The Associated Press reports the funds will be distributed among 10 organizations that work with the Greek government. These include the UN Refugee Agency, the Danish Refugee Council, Council, International Rescue Committee, Save the Children, and the International Red Cross. They'll provide food, shelter, education, and medical aid. Also, AFP reports that some migrants held in detention centers on the Greek islands are being allowed to leave. About 7,500 migrants have landed on the islands from Turkey since March 20th. That's when the deal between Turkey and the EU went into effect to restrict the flow of migrants to Europe. Those who've been held for 25 days and have applied for asylum have been allowed outside of the centers. However, they cannot leave the Greek islands. The EU Turkey deal still has problems. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker says Turkey must meet all the remaining conditions before the EU can open up a visa-free travel. His comments came a day after the Turkish Prime Minister warned that if the EU does not approve visa liberalization by June, then Turkey will not abide by the agreement. Meanwhile, in Germany, the founder of an anti-Islamic movement went on trial today for alleged hate speech. AFP reports that Lutz Bachmann is on trial under tight security in Dresden. Prosecutors say his remarks on Facebook disrupted public order and were an attack on the dignity of the refugees. If found guilty, he could be sentenced from 3 months to 5 years in prison. Also, a German anti-terror unit has arrested five people accused of plotting to attack refugee shelters and political opponents. Prosecutors say the four men and a woman belong to a far right-wing organization. Authorities say they had stockpiled hundreds of fireworks to use in the attacks. Belgian authorities say they have evidence to suggest more Islamic State recruits are looking to return to Europe. The head of the Government Crisis Center says intelligence indicates foreign terrorist fighters in Syria want to return not just to Belgium, but elsewhere in Europe to carry out attacks. Belgium maintains its terror alert at the second highest level a month after suicide bombings killed 32 people in Brussels. The governor of Nigeria's Borno state says $800 million in reconstruction funds offered by the World Bank is not nearly enough. AFP reports that Kashim Shitma has called the reconstruction money a drop in the ocean. Borno is the hardest hit of three northeastern states that have suffered 7 years of the Boko Haram insurgency. The World Bank estimates Borno state alone has lost more than $6 billion due to violence and conflict. In Ivory Coast, the National Order of Architects have opened the country's first professional architecture school, meaning students no longer have to be go abroad to learn the trade. In addition to design and theory, professors want Ivory Coast's next generation of architects to have an understanding of their country's specific building needs and heritage. Robbie Cory Boulay has the story from Abidjan.
A student at the Abidjan School of Architecture rips off a strip of bamboo to add to his latest workshop project, a Japanese-style tea house. The assignment is intended to familiarize students with local building materials. 19 students enrolled in the architecture school's inaugural class last December. They will spend the next 6 years completing coursework, internships, and a thesis project before they receive their diplomas. The school's founders say it is high time Ivory Coast has a professional architecture school of its own. Up to now, many would-be architects have opted to study in France or the United States. Francis Sosa is one of Ivory Coast's most prominent architects and a professor at the school. He estimated there were only about 100 professionally trained architects in the country, which boasts one of the fastest growing economies in the world. He says, for a country of 25 million inhabitants, we don't even have the same number of architects as the 14th arrondissement or district in Paris, or even Toulouse, a small French city. It's very difficult, he says, because we see today that there is more and more to build in urban spaces, hospitals, universities, schools, offices. Professionals are required to guide all of these projects. During the early phase of their training, Sosa's students spend a lot of time thinking about Ivory Coast's architectural heritage. They have already gone on trips to study buildings in the beach town of Grand Bassam and in Kong, a city in the country's northeast. Student George Bruce says the trip to Kong allowed us to understand our own heritage, which is architecture made from the earth, mosques made from the earth. This is our heritage and we need to conserve it, he says. We want to study these buildings, and why not make them again? Because, he says, the most beautiful buildings, the ones with the simplest concepts, we don't see those being done anymore. Other students are looking to make their mark on Abidjan, Ivory Coast's modern economic capital, a regional hub that already boasts 4 million inhabitants. Marie Daniel Conga said she hopes to build high-quality housing for poor city residents currently living in haphazard shanty towns. Nothing is regulated, she says. You construct as you want, when you want, where you want. There are multiple architects, but they are not focused on the entire population. And she says they work for individuals. So if there are Ivorian architects who are aware of the realities of our country, then we, this new generation of architects, can try to solve these problems. The Abidjan School of Architecture is significantly more expensive than many private schools in the country. Yearly fees start at roughly 4.5 million francs CFA, or around $8,000. The school hopes to offer scholarships in the future. Robbie Coy-Boulet for VOA News, Abidjan.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24-7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss the 2016 World Bank IMF Spring Meetings. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the sunny side of sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news, Monday through Friday, at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.